ranked one of America's top research universities, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries on UWM today. Here's the host, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor of University Relations.
Throughout the past school year, as UWM celebrates its 60th anniversary, this program has taken a closer look at each one of UWM's 14 schools and colleges. Today, our spotlight is on the College of Letters and Science, the largest at UWM, where many of the university's 26,000 students find their home. The college has majors and programs in the humanities, natural sciences, and social sciences. It's a wide offering that keeps Dave Clark, the college's acting dean, a pretty busy guy. He's our guest on this edition of UWM Today. Welcome, Dave.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
You know, when I talk to people about all of the different programs that we've got with 189 majors, it's just sometimes spinning people's heads as they begin to try to put their arms around a big place like UWM. And then when they find out that there are 14 schools and colleges, they even become sometimes a little more bewildered. How do you organize this? And in your case, you're leading right now the largest of the colleges. It's quite an endeavor.
Yeah, Letters and Science has 77 majors and programs and 62 graduate programs spread across 25 departments. We offer fully a third of the university's majors. And every student on the UWM campus takes classes in Letters and Science.
In a way, Letters and Science could be its own university. It probably is big enough to qualify as a lot of universities that are smaller in scale would describe themselves.
Yes. Letters and Science has hundreds of members of the faculty and hundreds of additional staff, academic staff and other staff members. And so we are large enough to be a small university on our own. We have many departments in Letters and Science that are larger than some of the other colleges on campus.
So talk about this grouping. How did the university ever come to put together humanities next to social sciences and then threw in the natural sciences? In some respects, you would think some of those programs might live in one of those other schools and colleges.
I honestly don't know the history of that. I think that my perception is that we started as many comprehensive universities do, with a sense that the most important thing for students to receive was a comprehensive liberal arts education. And that's the foundation of Letters and Science. And so it makes a lot of sense then that we have cores in humanities, social sciences, and natural sciences. And many of the other schools and colleges have a more professional focus.
Got it. Now, you have a lot of faculty members teaching all of these courses and tremendous expertise on the part of the faculties. I know that's one of the points that you folks like to stress or emphasize as students come to visit UWM.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't mean to minimize by saying that we have a focus on providing a comprehensive liberal arts education. We are also the research engine of the campus. Letters and Science generates 53% of the research expenditures on campus. And we are one of the primary drivers behind UWM's recent acquisition of the R1 status.
And R1, for those listeners who may be unfamiliar, is that sort of stratosphere of research universities that have been identified as being at the very top of their game.
It's a really common measure of research excellence. It's one of many that we have, but it's perhaps one of the more famous measures of research excellence.
And as listeners heard at the beginning of the program, there are very few universities that have that ranking. What, about 46, almost 4,700 colleges and universities, and only 115 in the entire country that are considered R1. And lo and behold, UWM is one of them.
And we're quite proud.
How do you find your faculty members to provide the tremendous service that they do in each one of these different disciplines? How do you begin to search for the right people, knowing that you have such a huge array of programs?
we're very fortunate in that we are able to take the time and care to launch nationwide searches for faculty members, and so we attract the best and brightest from all over the country. We've hired recently from Stanford, from Berkeley, from Yale, Harvard. These are top flight faculty, and we also hire faculty from other UW system schools, which also produce top flight faculty and have top flight faculty. So they come from all over the place.
What's the draw for coming to UWM?
UWM is a unique place. We have a unique combination of a strong research emphasis with an access mission and a community engagement mission. So we sit in a very unique place in the University of Wisconsin system, in that we're not a four-year comprehensive university, nor are we at the research extreme of a Madison. We are something that's unique and special in the system.
As you take a look at that unique access of mixing research and that first foot in the door for so many different families, that's a challenging job for any university to do just one of those well. But mm-hmm. to do both access and research must put in especially extra, I don't know if the word is burden, on the part of faculty members who are trying to juggle all of these balls.
Yeah, it's a unique set of challenges, and maybe we should back up and talk just for a second about what access represents. It's our responsibility to provide and make it easy for students who are local to have access to an excellent college education that is affordable and high quality. That can be a real challenge in combination with a high flying research mission that brings in millions and millions of dollars to provide to support other aspects of the Wisconsin economy. But the way that we approach it is we think of research not as a separate item from our teaching, but as integrated with and critical to our teaching mission. So one of the things that we do well and that we are working on ramping up even further is our Office of Undergraduate Research. Right now, our students have opportunities to do paid and for-credit research with faculty members. These are experiences that they can't get at a lot of other universities, where they get firsthand experience working on major research projects with world-class faculty.
And what's really unique is that they can be doing this as early as their freshman year.
Absolutely. We like to loop them in as quickly as possible. It's what gets them excited about the education and seeing what's different about a UWM education.
What do those students bring into the research laboratory? Is there anything are there ways in which the university itself benefits by having freshmen, sophomores, juniors in those research labs?
Absolutely. We have students who are coming in, maybe not having had a research experience before, but as they grow into those roles, they're not only getting a great educational experience, but we're benefiting from their practical experience and their knowledge base as they expand.
And as you point out, at a lot of universities, you have to be in graduate school before you even think about stepping into a laboratory.
That's absolutely the case, and that's something that we're very proud of. I went to our Office of Undergraduate Research poster session just a couple of weeks ago, and there were presentations and posters from these undergraduate students. These students are doing graduate level research projects at the undergraduate level.
So, David, when you have students who have never had anybody in their family attend college before them, that in a sense puts an extra burden on the university, doesn't it? Because there's nobody back at home necessarily saying, here, let me show you the ropes. It's left up to faculty and folks like you to help these first-gen students find their way.
It means we need to be on our game. Folks who have no one at home saying, this is what college is like, do need a little additional support. College is kind of a mysterious thing when you go out for the first time. And if you don't have a lot of family lore contributing to your experience, you need a little bit more support. That said, having those students in the classroom is a great opportunity for everyone involved. You know, they bring a perspective that other kinds of families may not have. That when college is a brand new eye-opening thing to you, you bring a perspective that's different from somebody who was always expected that they would go to college and that has a long history of that in their families.
And of course, these same students are then sitting in a classroom next to someone whose entire family may have gone to college.
Exactly.
What happens with the interaction in that environment?
I think it enriches the experience for both of those students. They both you know, learn from what it would be like to be that other person.
You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. So good to have you with us this week. I'm Tom Lujack, and joining us in the studio is Dave Clark. Dave is the acting dean of the College of Letters and Science. This is part of our 60th anniversary series that we're doing as UWM celebrates 60 years in the community. Letters and Science is the largest college. Again, many, many of the 26,000 students spend a good chunk of their time under Dave's domain. I'm not sure if that sounds quite accurate, but Dave's domain has a nice ring to it, doesn't it? Dave, your background, you are one of those individuals who has come up through the ranks. You started as a assistant professor.
Correct.
And worked your way up now to a professor. You've chaired the English department, and now you're in administration. Do you miss the classroom, or are you spending still enough time in the classroom as well as running the college on an interim basis?
I'm still teaching, and I wouldn't give that up. I'm teaching a course in digital arts and culture this semester to a small group of really dedicated folks. It's a capstone course, so it's one of their final courses before they graduate, and that's a fun bunch to work with. I'm helping them with resumes and cover letters and thinking about the job market and their prospects, and it's a really interesting time for those students, and so it's a fun time for me to be able to work with them.
Do you have any research in your area that students get involved in terms of the undergraduates?
I do engage students in some of my projects. My own work is in professional and technical communication and technical writing to be specific. And I have a startup company that I've been working on, and I've got students engaged in a number of different aspects of that, from developing websites to developing, you know, Google AdWord campaigns to help with marketing, to helping me with the actual software development. So there's a lot of opportunities for students at a number of different levels, and I'm lucky enough to be able to fund them with some grants.
And of course, a lot of the students are so comfortable with a smartphone in their hands or a laptop on their desk. I imagine that sometimes they're familiarity or comfort level with that technology is something you simply couldn't buy, right?
It's true that although I do find that their expertise can be very narrow. Often we'll see students are very good with mobile devices and texting and Snapchat, but you know, are a little troubled when confronted with something like, you know, putting page numbers in Microsoft Word. Those are technologies that they're not as familiar with, and so there's definitely still a kind of an emphasis.
You talked about starting your own company. I think that would surprise a lot of people when they also know that you're an English professor. English professor starting their own company, and yet you've carved out a pretty interesting niche that that you are pursuing.
Yeah, well, I've been working as a consultant for a long time, helping organizations to improve their internal communications. I work, most often with engineers and scientists in large organizations who need help writing like compliance reports for the Environmental Protection Agency, for example, or internal compliance documents. And so I've been working with the National Science Foundation and some other grant agencies to develop some software that is going to augment the kind of support I'm able to provide in a day-to-day workshop, which is often the form my consulting takes. What I find is that these folks take my workshop and then they go back to their desks and they can't remember what to do or, you know, what I taught them in that workshop, which is totally understandable. And so we're trying to provide more longitudinal support to really help people improve their writing on a day-to-day basis within their companies.
And Dave, that's one of the neat things about UWM these days, because of the emphasis that's been placed on entrepreneurial teaching, entrepreneurial thinking.
Mm-hmm. It's been a real eye-opening experience for me. I had this idea, and I was fortunate to find that there were so many resources on campus for entrepreneurs. And as you know, we were opening a new center for entrepreneurship in the not too distant future. We already have a great presence in innovation in the UWM Research Foundation with Brian Thompson. And we have a lot of student experiences on campus that are focused on entrepreneurship, like the Student Startup Challenge. And there are lots of opportunities for faculty as well who want to get engaged in starting businesses.
So let's tie this back into the college again. How widespread do you find the presence of these entrepreneurial programs in the humanities or in social sciences?
I would say the natural sciences, first and foremost, are the most entrepreneurial. They may have the most obvious links to entrepreneurial activity in that they develop products that involve patents. But there is a lot of room to grow within the social sciences and in the humanities as well, where there are, you know, project ideas and business ideas that can come out of our research work that could be funded and that could create a lot of interesting connections.
You know, sometimes we hear the criticism, at least I do, when I walk through the state capitol and I spend a lot of time there lobbying or advocating for higher education. And it's not at all uncommon to come across individuals who will say, you know, we really should make sure that the universities today are training people for their next job. And they sometimes ask, do the liberal arts do that? You know, does it help you to get employed if you're taking courses in the humanities? How do you respond to folks who raise those points?
I think that's exactly what courses in the liberal arts do. In the humanities are no exception. College graduates today can expect to have not just multiple jobs during their time in the workforce, but multiple careers. And the key things that they need to be picking up in college in order to prepare themselves for the kinds of change that they're going to encounter in the workforce are, you know, foundational knowledge of science and society, a global mindset, excellent written and verbal communication skills, critical thinking, data analysis, research skills, and lifelong learning skills, because they're going to need to change constantly. This is not a world any longer where you can graduate with a particular degree and count on working in that exact field for the rest of your career. That was true in my father's generation. He worked at the tractor factory for 42 years. That was a great job. That's not the case any longer. So a liberal arts education prepares you with the kind of breadth and foundation that will allow you to excel in a lot of different careers. I'm not saying that technical expertise doesn't matter, particularly in the natural sciences. That's really critical. But if you could combine those skill sets with the kind of foundational liberal arts learning, those are the people who are most successful. And all the studies suggest that 5-10 years out after graduation, general liberal arts majors, almost regardless of the major that they select, are competitive in terms of salary and success with most other fields.
Well, you gave the great example a little while ago, talking about the company you've started working with engineers or with scientists to mm-hmm. teach them how to communicate better. Might they have benefited more by taking an additional course or two in the humanities?
Well, and I wouldn't mind putting myself out of business, quite frankly. If we could build in a really strong foundation in the liberal arts across the university, that might be a great approach.
When students come to the university, how many of them have a good idea of what they're going to be doing 4 years, 5 years later when they walk out? How many of them walk in and say, I know exactly what my major is going to be and, just get me going at it?
I don't have a percentage on that. I know that it's I suspect it's low. I know in my own case that I was my plan was to be a computer engineer, and I ended up majoring in literature. Which was a pretty dramatic reversal. But I didn't find that it impacted my career options all that substantially. I think that our students today are no different in that regard. We have a lot of students who come in who are quote officially undecided students, and that's not a bad place to be. To say, okay, I'm going to spend a year exploring and taking general education courses and see what really becomes meaningful to me, what inspires me. Because I think more than anything else, having the drive and the ambition to work hard in your courses is as important as just about anything else.
Do you find a lot of students in your college, letters and science, change majors, change direction as they get a little deeper into their studies?
Oh, of course, of course. I think that's always been true for college students, you know, that they, you know, especially with younger students, you often don't know what you want to do, and you may not know after you graduate what you want to do. And so that's why, again, that liberal arts foundation is so critical, because it positions you so well to whatever it is that you're going to do next.
And this brings us back to the professors, to the people who are at the front of the classroom. How do you prepare the professors to make certain that they are as engaged or as responsive to those students who are casting their net out, trying to figure out, you know, what island they're going to end up on?
I don't think our professors draw that distinction. I think we have excellent faculty at UWM, and I think that those faculty members are as committed to working with all of their students as, you know, regardless of whether they are a major or whether they're just simply putting their toe in the water to see if they like the class. I think that they're meeting the students where they are.
I'm always struck at the juggling act that faculty have to play in terms of taking care, great care, of those students in the classroom, but in many, many cases also having this research agenda of their own. How do you juggle the time? How do you make sure that you keep all the plates up in the air?
By working constantly. The actual time spent in the classroom, you know, is a fairly small part of a professor's week. But so much teaching goes well beyond what is happening during those hours in the classroom. You're spending time, you're reading drafts, you're responding to emails, you are doing one-on-one advising. There's so much additional work that goes into being an effective teacher that goes well beyond that and just that contact time. And you have to figure out how to carve out time for your own work. And for the you know, enormous service load that the college puts on you. You know, we expect that our folks will serve on committees, will be doing thankless curricular work, that will be, you know, and so there's an enormous amount of work, far more than 40 hours of work that we have to try to pack into every single week. And so I know our faculty are hardworking folks. They are working late at night. If I'm up at 9 o'clock sending emails, I get responses.
What a testimony to the caliber of the people the university has. Has technology changed things in the college over the last few years? Do you see things being taught in the classroom or courses being offered that perhaps were not possible before the advent of what we all carry around with us?
It's interesting. I think my best perspective on this comes down to writing, which is my own area of expertise, and how much smartphones and texting and other technologies like these have changed what writing means. Our students write more than they ever did, far more than they did when I was in college, when writing was literally something you did for class assignments and nothing else. These students write to each other all the time, but they write in a way that many of us find alien or alienating. And it's hard to know what to do with that and how. And so we have kind of a different task in front of us. We have to do we train students how to be more effective at Snapchat? I don't think so. I think they would need to teach us. do we allow Snapchat, you know, ethos to become part of their academic papers and writing? Well, I don't think so. But students need to learn to be adept at register switching, at being able to move among these different tools and technologies in a way that is appropriate for the audience they're writing to. That's a trick. So you'll find students who will, you know, send you a text message that was clearly written in the way that they would talk to a peer, and you have to say, okay, wait, no, this is not how you speak in a professional register. And so it's a very different set of problems than we had even 15 years ago.
So but that is part of the foundation that allows that student to be successful in the work environment when they do walk across the stage, get that diploma, and start working.
Absolutely. And 3 years from now, we'll all be using some new technology that hasn't been invented yet. And those folks need to have a foundation that will allow them to adapt easily and effectively to whatever that new tool's capabilities are. And that ability to switch registers, to switch languages, to think about audience and purpose in a critical fashion is really at the core of what they're going to need to be able to do.
It sounds like you're still excited every time you walk in a classroom.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I'm teaching things now that 3 years I didn't know anything about. And, you know, it's an exciting time with the technological advancements.
Well, Dave, thanks so much for taking some of your time today to talk to us and our listeners about the College of Letters and Science. Again, serving as the acting dean, soon should be a new permanent dean appointed to the college. Perhaps in the summertime, we're waiting to see if that search comes together. But in the meantime, good to know that the college has been in good hands these last several months as you've taken the helm.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Dave Clark, who is the acting dean of the College of Letters and Science and also professor in the university's Department of English, our guest on this edition of UWM Today. Well, that's all for this week's program. We will see you next week back here at the same time. Take care, everybody. I'm Tom Lujack.
You've been listening to UWM Today with host Tom Lujack, the weekly program where you get to meet the people behind one of America's top research universities, University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Playing a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin, UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Learn more at uwm.edu.